Let me now introduce the next speaker, who's very well known to many of us, Dr. Monica Gandhi from UCSF. She'll be talking on high viral load suppression rates on long-acting ART in a safety net clinic population.
Well, thank you so much for the COI organizers for allowing us to present this data on behalf of my co-authors listed here. So we all know this. There are effective oral daily ART regimens, but it doesn't mean that everyone can take their HIV medications perfectly every day. Adherence barriers vary. Stigma, forgetting, substance use, housing, and food insecurity. We have so many different multifactorial reasons why the rate of virologic suppression overall in the US is at a 65% rate, and in the world, even on those on therapy after 3 years, stands at about 65%. So long-acting ART came out, and we were excited, but remember the designs of the three clinical trials, as we've mentioned before. FLAIR, ATLAS, ATLAS 2M, as shown here on the right, all required absolute adherence to oral ART, staying virologically suppressed for a period of time, 20 weeks in FLAIR, 6 months in ATLAS and ATLAS 2M, and then the switch could occur to long-acting injectable cabotegravir and rilpivirine. That isn't all of our patient populations. Now, there was a 1.4% virologic failure rate among the 1,224 participants across these three trials. So that is the baseline low virologic failure rate in ATLAS, FLAIR, and ATLAS 2M. So we wanted to try long-acting antiretroviral therapy in our clinic, and we wanted to try it in a clinic that didn't always look like clinical trial participants. The Ward 86 HIV clinic in San Francisco serves publicly insured patients. Majority of our patients are not only are they all publicly insured, they're low income, and there are high rates of mental illness at this point, 38%. Substance use is over a third, and unstable housing stands at about a third. So the methods of our study was not what was on the left side of your screen, which is the inclusion criteria of the trials. We didn't actually require virologic suppression prior to starting long-acting antiretroviral therapy. What we required was on the right side, that a willingness and an expression that they will come in or give us contact information to be allowed to give them the injectable medication every 4 weeks. So viremia was not an exclusion criteria of our demonstration project. And then we started this more than a year ago, and now I'm going to present to you today the descriptive statistics of this demonstration project, including injections received, how late they were, and our ultimate virologic suppression rate in our project. So this really shows the demographics of the 133 patients that we have to date to present to you. This is updated from the abstract that we submitted to CROI between June of 2021 and November of 2022. As you can see, 76 of these 133 patients were suppressed on oral ART prior to going to long-acting, but 57 had active viremia. You can see here the mean viral load of the patients who were viremic. And you can see notably that the median CD4 count in those who were viremic was much lower than those who were virologically suppressed. Many of these patients had never been suppressed, and they were heading towards very low, a high degree of immunosuppression. It was a very diverse cohort. It was 68% non-white. 66% of these patients were unstably housed in some way. And then 33% had active substance use, mostly methamphetamine in our city. And 74% did receive on-time injections. So three quarters would come in for the on-time injections. So we had plenty, not plenty, but we had some late injections. And the main result in those who are virologically suppressed, those 76 who started with virologic suppression, is that they all stayed virologically suppressed. This slide now shows what happened in those who started with viremia. Among the viremic people living with HIV, essentially, to keep it simple, 57 were started with active viremia and essentially 55 suppressed. Two, however, had early virologic failure. And I'm going to tell you about those early virologic failures next. This Kaplan-Meier plot shows that 97.5% by 26 weeks were expected to achieve virologic suppression. Our current virologic failure rate of two out of the cohort of 133 gives us a virologic failure rate of 1.5%, which is the same virologic failure rate that I explained was in the registrational clinical trials. And in fact, 68% of the failures in the registrational clinical trials occurred within the first 24 weeks. And our virologic failures were also early. So what did these two virologic failures look like? Patient number one never showed the expected 2-log reduction after the first induction dose. Actually, did not go to where we wanted them to. 214,540 went down to 39,293. Our protocol calls for genotyping at every visit at which a patient is not suppressed. And the patient had actually started with a minor NNRTI mutation, which is a V179I, which came out very minor in the ECHO and THRIVE trials, and developed two further mutations, a Y181C and an L100I, both in the RT gene. The second patient started with a minor INSTI mutation, T97A, also didn't show that expected 2-log reduction, and developed a R263K, which is an integrase inhibitor mutation, and an E138K, which is a rilpivirine-associated RAM. I think this is an important piece, is that neither one of these two patients could take oral ART prior to starting long-acting, and nor are they on oral ART right now. They absolutely have options, which would be darunavir-based, and they cannot take oral ART. So in conclusion, if, as Dr. Taibo said, 10% of the population is holding 90% of the virus, which is true in modeling, we need innovations for this population if we want to end the HIV epidemic, if we want to get that particular patient population that's holding so much of the virus. The most frequent adherence barriers in our setting, but the adherence barriers vary across populations and across the planet, are substance use, mental illness, and housing insecurity in the city of San Francisco. And despite this, though we tried long-acting ART in our diverse urban low-income population, and we saw very high virologic suppression rates equal to those that were seen in the clinical trials. I think the long-acting ART used creatively and used boldly could really make a dent in the HIV epidemic movement, and I think it's worth doing. We need to look at sustained suppression over time, which we'll of course be doing, and we hope to study this in a different way across multiple sites in the context of the ACTG. So I wanted to also add that we have a protocol because we did this in a rigorous fashion. What I mean by rigorous is that we have a multi-page protocol. We update that protocol all the time. We tightened our protocol after those two failures to ensure there was no NNRTI or INSTI mutations that would ever be allowed in, minor or not. And we update that protocol very routinely, and it's publicly available on the San Francisco Getting to Zero website. We meet every 2 weeks and talk about this. And this is our program, which we call the Ward 86 Splash Program. Thank you very much.